Hello. Hello and welcome, welcome, welcome to the 66th, right?
Yes.
Episode of
Yes.
PEM Podcast, the Psychic Eye Mystery Podcast.
Finally.
I know, the Psychic Eye Mystery Podcast. I'm your host, Victoria Laurie, with my fabulous co-host and adorable sister, Sandy. She does this, but she really is adorable. Ask any of her friends. The first thing out of their mouth, adorable. She's adorable. I want to put her in my pocket. So we are back after a long hiatus. And you said to me the other day, you're like, your fans are really nervous that you're dead, Victoria. And I'm like, oh, that's adorable. And then I'm getting these IMs from actual fans who are like, are you dead? Are you alive? What's going on? So not an exaggeration, it turns out. So the rumors of my death are grossly exaggerated. I'm very much alive. It's been a month. It has been a month. So I had to pack up my place, move 80% of it into storage, and idiot me, because I'm like, I do CrossFit. I'll do it myself. I don't need to hire anyone. So I did it all by myself, moving couches and beds and bed frames and all that. I just figured it was a good workout, and it so won't do that again. I don't recommend that. Then I had to move into my new digs and unpack a lot of stuff and get it all situated. And then promptly my this reoccurring stomach thing that I have started up again. It was by far the worst that it's ever been. So like I actually texted Sandy, like, you need to check in on me because I don't know if I'm going to pull through. I couldn't keep anything down, like literally nothing down for almost 48 hours. It was bad.
And mind you, the
So
text did not include an address or any information about where she might be. So the treasure hunt could
other
have
people know
begun.
where I am. Yeah, it wasn't my best day, let's put it that way. So and then I no sooner recover from that than I experienced something similar, excuse me, experience symptoms that are consistent with a retinal tear. I Google it, it's like, oh, you need to seek medical attention. Okay, so I wait till the following morning because this happened on a Sunday. Wait till the following morning, make a call. And the receptionist sent me into an absolute panic because she's like, so what's going on? And so I tell her, I'm like, I'm seeing this flash of light behind my eye. And she goes, oh, that is not a sound you want to hear from anyone in the medical community when you are relaying symptoms. Let me just put that out there, right? So she's like, you need to hold. We need to get you an emergency appointment. So now I'm starting to like, oh my God, I'm actually going to go blind. The only doctor who is available to see me at this place, this eye institute, is in Flint, which is an hour away from where I live. So I'm shaking, right? I'm like, oh my God, her last words to me before I bolt out the door, because she's like, you have to get there in an hour. You have no other, like, you have to get there in an hour. Okay. I'm in my pajamas. I'm in my fucking pajamas. So there's no one to take care of Doc or Emmy. She's convinced.
Technical difficulty.
Oh, there we are. Did I freeze?
Yes, it was me going technical difficulty and panicking.
I'm like, anyway, so no one is around to take care of my fur babies, fur and feather babies. Sandy's in Boston, a million miles away from me. I peel out of here. I'm in the middle of no, I'm honestly in the middle of nowhere. I'm driving like a bat out of hell. I pause at a stop sign, right? I'm in the middle of nowhere. There's like nothing around. Pause at a stop sign. Woo! I'm like, are you kidding me? So the cop walks up and I'm like hysterical and I'm like, I'm having a medical emergency. And he's like, do you need an ambulance? And I'm like, no, this isn't a I might die emergency. This is a I might go blind. So, you know, he let me go with the lecture, you know. Why is it that I was talking to my really good friend, Nicole, who is a retired APD detective, Austin police detective. And I was relaying, you know, like the lecture. And I'm like, you know, Nicole, I said, you never would have done that to anyone. She's like, if you had explained it to me, Victoria, I would have driven you myself. You know, and I'm like, why are they on this power trip sometimes? It's like, dude, let me go. I have a completely clean record. You know, I've been driving for literally 40 years. Let me go. I understand. Got to stop at stop signs. I'm going blind. Let me go. So it ended up
definitely keep driving if you're going blind.
Yeah, right. That's pretty much what I'm still, you might see me touching my eye a lot because there's a floaty, right? So there's a sac that surrounds the eyeball. It's filled with fluid, and that's what tore. So that sends a floaty in my vision, and it's constantly, and it's big, you know, doing that. So I keep like touching my contact or, you know, wiping off my glasses. So that was my month. That has been, it has been a month. It has just been, yeah, but things are on the upswing. Everything's finally settled down. Everything's calm. Sandy and I are planning a Christmas party. We're going to do a psychic party at her home for a bunch of her friends, a bunch of my friends. And I'm telling her, I'm like, so I'm in charge of hors d'oeuvres and dessert. So today I made this. Ooh. So for those of you who are like, what is that? for all of you.
It's an easy bake oven cake.
I remember easy bake. I wanted one so bad. And Ruth and Jerry would not get us one because you burned the house down. This ran on like a
with a light bulb.
Yes, exactly. Right? That's all I wanted for years. I just wanted a fucking easy bake oven. Nope. Not for you. Nope. So, yeah. So now I'm like, I have to bake, I have to make, I have to do stuff. Right. So that is a, food coloring induced pound cake with, mascarpone filling with mascarpone filling. Mm. That's the mascarpone right there. Look at my hands. They're all purple. And a white chocolate, which is purple, white chocolate glaze dribbled over the top, topped with blueberries and blackberries.
It's a psychic cake.
Yes, exactly. It's indigo, right? Indigo and purple.
Yes.
Emmy is fascinated by the smell of this thing. So my dog is like all over it. So yeah. So I'm going to bite into that later and it's going to be delicious. So yeah, so that's one of the desserts that I'm serving. So I think like for the next couple of weeks, I'm just going to show the audience what I've made. So it's going to be food porn on Excellent. Here for a little while.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's, we're caught up. We are caught up.
Yes.
We're going to be doing in the next, I believe in the next week, I'm pretty sure it's going to be in the next week, a serial killer case that is pretty close to home for me. This is when I was 11. Really grabbed by a serial killer. Right. Had I not been aware and on the ball about it at the time, I wouldn't be here. I definitely wouldn't be here today. So I managed to get away. I was the one victim. Well, not victim. I was the one person that actually managed to get away from this shit, piece of shit. I'm going to be delving into that case deeply. It was a very traumatic experience for me. But I figure, you know, better to kind of dissect it a little bit and deal with that post-traumatic, you know, stress of it than to, I don't know, just sock it away in the back of my mind for a while. So we'll be diving into that case and, I'll be giving you my insights on what I think happened to these children that were murdered. So here in Michigan, And anecdote. Let's go up on a nice note. So I had a reading the other day with a client, and I always ask, you know, have I read for you before? I've thousands of clients, and a lot of them are like, you know, yes.
Do you remember this, when you said blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, no, like I don't even remember Sandy's readings. Like
she does not.
I remember nothing.
Yeah.
So I had a wonderful woman. She didn't give me that. Yes, but I had read for her before. The reason I ask is so that I don't need to go into the long speech of what to expect. And her mom came through. It was wonderful and lovely. And might have been a grandmother, mother, grandmother. That's not the important part. The important part is no, mom. It was her mom. So she's engaged. I can't even remember the anecdotes. She's engaged, soon to be married. And she said, can you reach out to my grandfather? At the end of the reading, she said, can you reach out to my grandfather? So he comes barreling in, just the funnest guy, just the nicest energy, right? And she said, can you tell him thank you? And I said, well, he can hear you. And I said, what are you thanking him for? And she said that my last reading, he had come in, he'd been the first one through. And he knew I had just had a breakup. And he said, don't worry, you're going to meet your prince. I'm going to send you a prince. And he kept holding up two fingers, indicating the number two. The following February, she met her current fiance. Mm,
yes. How lovely.
And he is a prince. Oh my yes. God. His energy was fantastic. So I just thought that was just absolutely, you know, they love to play matchmaker up there. Doesn't always work out, but they love to play it. So I thought that was adorable. And then I know this is like the long prelude. People are like, where's the podcast? So I've got a book coming out in 2 weeks, Coaching Fire. I love this color. I love the drama on it, you know, and the dress. Is...
Yeah, I love Kat going.
I know. Yeah.
What do I do?
Pretty much just stand there in shock. That's what you do. You don't, you know, don't engage the fire.
Yeah.
So the dress, I was trying to imagine taking Sandy, I think I mentioned this before, trying to take you shopping and, you know, for the shock factor. So I was acting as Gilly in the book, taking Kat to Michael Kors and throwing this number on her. You know, hijinks ensue. So that's
you described her outfit with 5-inch heels. And I remember reading maybe you reduced it down because I was like 5-inch heels. I don't know how anybody could walk in 5-inch heels. Yeah. But anyway.
Well, 4 inches is kind of standard. And then there's the 6 inches. Usually did I say 5?
I thought so.
Well, I know where I got that from because the booties that went with the dress were that height. So whatever height it was the actual booties that went with this dress from Michael Kors. Right. So I could teach you how to walk in heels, baby. I gotcha.
Yeah. I will never put on anything that high. No way. I just like
you used to wear.
Yeah. That was before a long time ago. Before twins.
Man, I remember you used to wear heels when you came home for the holidays and just not take them off the whole time. Like
that's
just
a frightening thought to me. So now it's all sneakers. Thanks for playing.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm back into heels. I really like them. You know, they just make an outfit. I like them. So I wear them a lot.
All right.
Anyway,
are we ready? Okay. So put my glasses on. So episode 66 is part two of the case that we did a whole month ago. So sorry. But we wanted to continue the story of the Long Island serial killer. And this particular case focuses on the disappearance of Shannon Marie Gilbert, who was an escort. And just after midnight on May 1st, 2010, she ended up sparking one of the largest murder investigations in Long Island history in what became known as the Gilgo Beach murders. To date, 11 bodies, including Shannon's, have been recovered along the remote stretch of Long Island's Gilgo and Oak Beaches. And in our last episode, we focused on the 10 victims that were identified between 2010 and 2011. But unfortunately, authorities don't believe that Shannon was a victim of the Long Island serial killer, Rex Howerman. They ruled her death accidental. And yet the circumstances leading up to her disappearance are both concerning and pretty puzzling. So on May 1st, 2010, 24-year-old Shannon Gilbert was driven to Oak Beach to meet a client that she'd secured through Craigslist. For her date, she donned a blonde wig and a pair of dangly hoop earrings, a brown leather jacket, and jeans. Her driver dropped her off at around 2 a.m., and just shy of 3 hours later, at 4:51 a.m., 911 dispatchers received a panicked phone call from Shannon where she stated, quote, "There's someone after me. There's someone after me," followed by, "They're trying to kill me." The 911 operator found Shannon to be somewhat incoherent and repetitive, perhaps even under the influence of drugs. And when pressed about her location, Shannon ignored the question, making it impossible for police to respond to her call for help. Authorities later determined that the two male voices heard in the background at the time of her 911 call were that of Shannon's driver, Michael Pack, and her client, Joseph Brewer. During her call from Brewer's house, Joseph can be heard trying to get Shannon to leave. And when he apparently approached Shannon, she screamed and ran out the door. Her 911 call then recorded Shannon fleeing Brewer's house and running towards the nearby home of 75-year-old Gus Coletti, a retired insurance fraud investigator who had lived in Oak Beach for over 30 years. Shannon pounded on the Coletti's door, yelling, "Help me, help me, help me." Gus, who had been in his bathroom shaving, rushed to open the door and found Shannon on his stoop repeating, "Help me, help me, help me." Gus asked, "What's the matter?" But Shannon simply stated at Gus, Shannon simply stared at Gus and wouldn't answer. When Gus told Shannon that he'd call the police, Shannon begged him not to. Despite her protests, a concerned Gus called 911 to report the situation. He then told Shannon that the police were on the way and invited her to sit down in a nearby chair. Instead, she bolted out the door. As Gus called after Shannon, he noticed an Asian man driving a black SUV moving slowly down the street. The man in question was Michael Pack, Shannon's driver. Gus turned to look in the direction that Shannon had run off and spotted her hiding underneath the boat stowed in his yard. He then approached Michael Pack's vehicle and demanded to know where he was going. Pack told Gus that he was looking for Shannon, and Gus retorted that he'd called 911 and the police were on the way. Pack responded by saying, "You shouldn't have done that." Suddenly, Shannon darted out from underneath Gus's boat, and Michael Pack took off after her in the SUV. Gus yelled after Pack to stop, but Pack continued to accelerate and followed Shannon around a curve. It was now 5:21 a.m. Gus called 911 again, and by this time, Shannon had run to the home of another Oak Beach resident, Barbara Brennan. Instead of opening her door to Shannon, Barbara also called 911. But when the police finally arrived at 5:40 a.m., Shannon Gilbert had vanished. Officers on the scene figured she had left the area with her driver, Michael Pack. Unfortunately, the local police that responded to Gus Coletti's call knew nothing about Shannon's desperate 23-minute 911 call because when she couldn't tell them her location, her call for help was transferred to the New York State Police. 2 days later, Sherry Gilbert was alerted to the fact that her sister Shannon was missing by Shannon's worried boyfriend, who relayed that Shannon hadn't come home from her date. Sherry and her sister Sarah immediately filed a missing persons report. After 8 days with no news, they drove 140 miles from their home in upstate New York to Oak Beach, Long Island, to look for Shannon themselves. The Gilbert sisters went door to door within the Barrier Island community, handing out flyers in a vain attempt to find witnesses and piece together a timeline of what might have happened to Shannon. The girls were highly concerned because Shannon had been diagnosed with a bipolar disorder that caused her to struggle with depression and mood swings. Unfortunately, Shannon had recently stopped taking her medication because she claimed it gave her the shakes. Sherry was especially heartbroken because Shannon had become an escort at age 20 to make a better life for herself, and a few years prior to her disappearance, Shannon started posting ads for her escort services on Craigslist, where she could charge up to $200 an hour and keep two-thirds of the fee. The other third went to a driver who would take her to the date and provide security. That strategy had paid off at this time at the That strategy paid off as at the time of her disappearance, Shannon was living on her own in New Jersey City, New Jersey, taking online college classes for creative writing and had dreams of becoming a performer. It took nearly a month for the New York police to connect Shannon's desperate 911 call to the missing persons report her family had filed in New Jersey. By then, the only trace of Shannon Marie Gilbert was a set of footprints in the sand heading in the general direction of an empty stretch of shore along Gilgo Beach.
The search for Shannon led police back to the last place she was seen, the gated community of Oak Beach, and to three men. The man who hired her, Joseph Brewer, her driver, Michael Pack, and a doctor who put himself in the middle of the investigation, Dr. C. Peter Hackett. Terms of the client, Joseph Brewer. On May 1st, 2010, at about 10 a.m., Shannon arrived in a dark SUV at a two-story wood-framed home on Fairway Island in Oak Beach, Long Island, a quiet gated community a few miles from Fire Island, on a string of barrier islands along South Oyster Bay. The house belonged to Joseph Brewer, a 46-year-old unemployed financial advisor who was separating from his wife. A few hours earlier, Brewer had responded to an ad Shannon had posted on Craigslist. While Brewer admitted that he'd solicited Shannon online, he told authorities it was not for sex, he just wanted company. He also claimed that he didn't know what set Shannon off or why she'd made a panicked 911 call. Instead, he told investigators that Shannon's fears were imagined. Brewer insists he never harmed Shannon, and instead he just wanted her out of his house, and he had invited her driver, Michael Pack, into his home to help persuade Shannon to leave. Brewer claims that the last time he saw Shannon was as she was running out of his home toward his neighbor's, Gus Coletti's, house. The Suffolk County Police searched Joseph Brewer's house, seized his car, and questioned him, as well as administered a polygraph test. As a result of their investigation, police concluded that Brewer is not a suspect in Shannon's disappearance. The driver, Michael Pack. The most thorough account of what transpired in the early morning hours of May 1st, 2010 with Shannon Marie Gilbert comes from Michael Pack, a driver that Shannon had hired in the past and who had driven Shannon to Joseph Brewer's home in Oak Beach. Once Pack had dropped Shannon off at Brewer's house, he waited for her in his parked SUV playing poker on his cell phone. According to another source, Shannon and Brewer left his house together in Brewer's car and returned within 15 minutes, although it's not clear where they went. Michael Pack told authorities it wouldn't have been unusual for Shannon to do something like that if she was out looking for drugs. Shannon's sisters confirmed that Shannon liked to party, indulging mostly in pot, coke, and prescription drugs. At about 5 a.m., Pack says Brewer came out of his house and asked him for help with Shannon. Inside, Pack says he found Shannon in a panic, clutching her cell phone with 911 on the line. Pack tried to get Shannon to leave with him, but she refused to go. He told authorities that Shannon seemed delirious, likely due to the influence of drugs. Unable to get Shannon to come with him, Pack returned to the SUV to wait for Shannon. A few minutes later, Pack saw Shannon bolt from the Brewer's house, stumble down the front steps, and take off down the road. As Pack followed her in the SUV, Shannon continued to run away, screaming for help, until she arrived at the home of Gus Coletti. After Shannon bolted from Gus's home, Pack claims he spent close to an hour driving around Oak Beach searching for Shannon before giving up and heading back into the city. He told authorities that he never touched Shannon and he had nothing to do with her disappearance. Like Brewer, he passed a polygraph test and the police do not consider him to be a suspect in Shannon's disappearance. The third suspect, the concerned citizen, Dr. C. Peter Hackett, is an Oak Beach neighbor of Joseph Brewer's. The day after Shannon went missing, Mari Gilbert, Shannon's mother, claimed that she received a phone call from a man claiming to be Hackett. The man said he ran a home for wayward girls where Shannon had been staying and was calling because she had left with her driver unexpectedly. The man asked Mari if she knew where Shannon was, which was the first time Mari had been made aware of the fact that her daughter was missing. Mari didn't know what to make of the call, and when pressed, she couldn't be certain if the man who called her was, in fact, Peter Hackett. Once the police began to investigate Shannon's disappearance, Mari dug further into Peter Hackett's background and discovered that he played some sort of security role at Oak Beach and he had in the past performed some police and EMS work. For his part, Hackett claimed that he never called or met the Gilberts and that he does not run a halfway house for wayward girls. However, news reporters at CBS 48 Hours confronted Hackett with evidence that he in fact did call Mari Gilbert on May 3rd using his wife's cell phone. With his story frequently changing, 48 Hours interviewed former Chief of Detectives Dominic Varone, who told reporters that while Hackett's behavior may be viewed as strange, it's not out of character. Hackett is known to be a person who likes to get involved, he likes to tell stories, and he can often exaggerate the facts. Varone believes it's likely Hackett did contact Mari Gilbert to offer his assistance. According to the police, Dr. Hackett is not a suspect in Shannon's case. However, Mari Gilbert believes that Joseph Brewer frequently brought girls to Oak Beach for parties and that Hackett knew about his activities. She also suspected that Pack drove girls to other parties within the Oak Beach gated community, so he knew the area well. Even if Brewer, Hackett, or Pack weren't responsible for Shannon's disappearance, Mari believes that they had been less than forthcoming about what actually happened on May 1st, 2010. Mari's working theory was that Shannon got high with Brewer that night. Then, for whatever reason, he did something to spook her, causing her to think that somebody was going to kill her. While Pack was there to protect Sharon, it's possible that she had spent all the money that she'd been paid by Brewer on drugs and did not have enough to pay Pack his fee, causing Shannon to believe she wasn't safe with her date or her driver. In December 2011, a year and a half after Shannon vanished, police discovered her jeans, shoes, and a pocketbook with her ID in a marsh by Oak Beach, not far from where she was last seen. A week later, a quarter of a mile away from her personal effects, investigators found Shannon's skeletal remains nearly intact. While the medical examiner could not determine Shannon's cause of death, authorities do not believe she was the victim of the Long Island serial killer. Instead, they theorize that in the early morning hours of May 1st, 2010, Shannon ran into the thick marsh along Gilgo Beach, got lost, and ultimately drowned. In May of 2012, the Suffolk County medical examiners ruled that Shannon Marie Gilbert accidentally drowned after entering the marsh. They believe that she was in a drug-induced panic and have concluded that hers was a death of misadventure and or inconclusive. However, Shannon's family believe that the police theory doesn't make sense. How could Shannon's clothing and personal effects have been recovered a quarter of a mile away from her body? Given that Shannon fit the profile of the Gilgo Four, she, like Maureen Bernard Baines, Melissa Bartholomew, Megan Waterman, and Amber Lynn Costello, were all $200 an hour escorts in their 20s and petite women. It's difficult to accept that Shannon died accidentally, as ruled by the medical examiner. Convinced that the Suffolk police weren't going to investigate Shannon's death, attorney John Ray took matters into his own hands, and in November of 2012, he filed a wrongful death suit against Dr. C. Peter Hackett. The malpractice suit claims that Dr. Hackett's actions led to Shannon's death and that he improperly treated Shannon on May 1st, 2010 for distress by medicating her with narcotics. In fact, Dr. Hackett was known to provide medical treatment out of his home. Two neighbors signed affidavits, one stating that the doctor had given him a prescription injectable steroid and another claiming that Hackett provided prescriptions for Oak Beach residents. Hackett admits he has treated friends and neighbors, but he denies that he ever saw or treated Shannon. The case against Hackett, who moved to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, shortly after Shannon's body was found, is still pending today, although some parts of the suit have been dismissed. In September of 2014, forensic pathologist Michael Baden agreed to conduct an independent autopsy of Shannon's remains in hopes of determining a clear cause of death. Baden found damage to her hyoid bone in a manner that is consistent with homicidal strangulation. Baden also noted that her body was found face up, which is not common for drowning victims. Despite this, her death is still officially listed as an accident, as Baden's official findings were inconclusive for a definitive cause of death. Interestingly, several of the Gilgo 4 victims died by strangulation, thereby creating an even stronger link between Shannon Marie Gilbert and the victims of the Long Island serial killer. However, the Suffolk County Police Department has continued to state publicly that Shannon's death was not consistent with her being the victim of violence or a violent offender. In the aftermath of all this, Mari Gilbert, Shannon's mother, continued to advocate for her daughter up until her tragic death on July 23, 2016, at the hand of her 27-year-old daughter, Sarah. Her daughter suffered from schizophrenia, with one report claiming that she had heard voices in her head telling her to carry out the crime. Sarah was charged and convicted of second-degree murder and fourth-degree possession of a weapon and was sentenced to 25 years in prison in August of 2017. My sources for this story include Wikipedia, Gilgo Beach serial killings, CBS News 48 Hours, 48 Hours uncovers missing escort Shannon Gilbert's final minutes, July 14, 2023, NewYorkMagazine.com, a serial killer in common, five women disappear, their bodies turn up on Gilgo Beach. The families of the victims formed a kind of sisterhood by Robert Kolker, July 14, 2023. Wikipedia, Mari Gilbert, and Zenger News, cold case no longer. After 13 years, a suspect is arrested in Gilgo Beach homicides on Long Island by Alan Krauts, July 18, 2023. So, V, what do you think happened on the night of May 1st, 2010? And in particular, what happened to Shannon Marie?
Okay, so there are a couple of really interesting sort of loose ends that don't make sense, right? Which is what makes Shannon's case so fascinating. The first is that she is found with a broken hyoid. It's been a long morning. Broken hyoid, stripped naked in the marsh. That to me screams foul play, right? Her remains were found intact, meaning she probably died, face up, looking at whoever killed her. I believe she was strangled. She was stripped naked, which is also really interesting. I don't believe that she was sexually assaulted. I don't think she was raped. I think Pack did it. I don't care what the lie detector says. I think he did it. I think when Gus called the police and he said, you shouldn't have done that, he thought, crap, she's out of her mind. She's saying that people are chasing her, that someone's trying to kill her. She's going to accuse me. And then, I'm going to go to jail. Right. So I think he had a lot to lose in hearing that the police had been called. I think that he chased her toward the marsh, murdered her, stripped her so that possibly her remains couldn't be identified, or so that it would look like maybe she went swimming or something, right? The other thing that's really interesting is Hackett. So Brewer and Shannon leave his place. They're gone for 15 minutes, right? That's a very short period of time. I don't think they left the gated community. So they got drugs somewhere within that gated community. You figure Hackett lived somewhere in the neighborhood, 5 to 7 minutes to drive to his house, 5 to 7 minutes to get the drugs, 5 to 7 minutes to get back. There it is, right? So I think he definitely gave Shannon some drugs. Could have shot her up, could have just handed her pills to swallow, but whatever. I think that the drugs were probably laced with something and it caused her to freak out. So I think that she absolutely was under the influence of drugs and was having a paranoid event, right? So she was delusional. She was hallucinating. I don't believe that when she called 911, she was actually in danger. I don't believe that. I think Brewer didn't have anything to do with it other than he's just an asshole who wanted girls at his home to keep him company. Like, would that work on anybody? Would anybody believe that? Like, I don't even know if a 5-year-old would believe that.
For $200 an hour just to keep you company?
Exactly. Go to the library. Librarians will keep you company for free. Asshole. Anyway, in her pocketbook, see, this is the other interesting thing. With Marie's theory that Shannon spent all of her money on the drugs, I'm like, and that could have really upset Pack as well. It's interesting that her pocketbook was found, but there's no mention of cash, right, in the pocketbook. So yeah, she spent the money on drugs. Pack grabs her. He has to shut her up quickly. So he obviously strangles her. It would have been easy. Just a tiny little thing. And then the strip search, like, I think he strip searched her. I think he was looking for cash, jewelry, anything he could grab off of her that might be of value to make up for carting her out to the gated community in New Jersey and heading back home.
In New York, honey.
Oh, in New York. Sorry.
Yeah. And she's frozen. Yep. Quality recording here, people. So,
there we go. I know.
I'm going to do a puppet show next.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to have to come up with like some filler. Again, I'm in the middle of nowhere. The internet isn't so great. So I got to find another place to do these podcasts. But I honestly think Pack was responsible. I don't think there was a fourth person involved. I think it was him. I think he did it. I don't think Hackett had a hand in killing her. I think he had a hand in sending her into a terrible drug alternate reality. And Brewer's just a skeevy, creepy dude. So that's my theory. I'm not buying that she went into the marsh and drowned. I can see how it's absolutely plausible, except for the inconsistencies, right?
Yeah.
Like, she stripped completely naked and then ran into a marsh. She was in a total panic, running for her life. She stops to strip naked and run into the marsh. Like, I understand she's hallucinating, but that isn't something that I think she would do. She's in a panic. When you're in a panic and running, you don't be like, oh, geez, these clothes, what a cumbersome thing. Strip them all off, you know? Someone's chasing her. She's not going to pause. She's going to keep going. Yeah. So that right there tells me absolutely foul play. The broken hyoid, right?
I think so. At this point, sure.
That broken bone right there. That's another big, big clue. And I appreciate that the police have turned over as much evidence as they possibly could and looked at everyone they possibly can for this. But my intuition keeps coming back to pack. So,
all right. Well, great.
That's what I think. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, Howerman was in court again today, and his wife has shared only publicly that her plan is to attend all of his hearings and the trial. She wants to see the evidence for herself to convince her that he, in fact, is the Long Island serial killer.
Well, I like that I really have respect for that, honestly. Because she's been married to this man forever, right? Mm-hmm. He's obviously two faces, obviously. Yeah. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. There are moments she probably thinks he was very tender and wonderful and loving, and trying to reconcile that with the violence of these murders would be a difficult thing, I would think.
I would too.
So seeing the evidence and being an impartial juror, that's good for her.
Yeah.
Good for her. Okay. It's also probably she has to reconcile with, did she miss anything? Do you know? There's obviously some guilt there, because to sit through a trial as awful as that one is going to be with the evidence that's going to be shown, that's going to be traumatic.
Yeah.
And so I give her a lot of credit. But we all know men who have two faces. Men and women, sorry. I don't want to be so biased. We all know people who have two faces. They can be one way to the world and another way behind closed doors. So it's very difficult to pick up on, you know, narcissists are amongst the best charmers out there.
Yes, for sure. So, all right. So hopefully we'll be back with another episode sooner rather than later.
Next week.
Okay.
Yes,
you've heard it here.
We're going to do it.
All right. Super. Thank you everyone for tuning in. Really appreciate it. Please click the like button if you enjoyed, if you enjoy our podcast in general. Please share the podcast with any of your friends that you think would be very interested in our content. We are very excited to try and grow our audience with your help and would very much appreciate it. And tune in for sure to the next episode that we present, which really has got, as Victoria said, a very deep personal connection to her. And she's frozen again. So I'm just going to end the podcast at this point. Thank you everyone for tuning in. If you'd like to learn more about Victoria or her books or her readings, please check out victorialaurie.com.
Thank you for getting that in. I'm like, oh my God, I'm frozen again. And I wanted to mention victorialaurie.com.
Yes.
Well, thanks, Sandy. I appreciate you working through all those technical difficulties and writing up this fantastically detailed case for us. So thank you. I love you so much.
All right. Love you too. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.